you're forgetting, girl, you made your bed and didn't want me in it. Whoa, girl, simmer on down a notch.
2:30 to 4, Monday to Friday, it is The Blitz. Mitch Widmeyer here with you on AM 1450 KATE. Going to the phone lines, our guest today as he joins us every Monday, Mike Grimm, voice of the Gophers, sports director at Minnesota News Network. Mike, as always, the time's appreciated. Thought we'd bounce around with a lot of different topics today. It is the end of July anyways. The PJ Fleck documentary airs this week on ESPNU. Are you down for the idea of all this exposure? Because I certainly don't think that this type of exposure can hurt.
No, I think that it's exactly the kind of stuff that Fleck is hoping for. He's got a national audience now with this four-part series. They'll be able to send out notifications to recruits and boosters and fans and say, hey, watch the show tonight. We don't know what the show's going to be about or like or what kind of light it'll shed the Gophers in, but one would presume it'll be a positive light. It'll talk a little bit about, Fleck and his process and, how he's come up to where he is as one of the youngest coaches in Division I. So I think that's exciting. I think that at a place like Minnesota, that's part of what attracted Fleck to it, because a place here that has not had a great deal of high-level success. I mean, they've had good years, and the Gophers have been to bowl games here on a number of years in a row. And but I'm talking high-level success. They have not had that for quite a while. And so the question is, a guy like Fleck, I think he looked at that as a situation where he can come in and do what he wants to do. Everybody should be pretty open to the idea. There's not any long-lasting traditions here that he needs to mess around with. I mean, there are a handful of traditions that he'll keep, but he's able to really build something he wants to build, and not every place was going to offer him that chance. So at a place like Minnesota that hasn't had that high-end success, you got to do everything you can, and there's no doubt Fleck is about building a brand, and this is all part of that.
Can a series like this, it's on the ESPN networks, mentioned it's on ESPNU, I think it starts August 2nd with the first episode of it, a feature on just his program, can that help recruiting, give some of these high school guys who aren't familiar with the U of M, who aren't from Minnesota, more of an idea of what the vibe is like?
Yeah, I think that absolutely. And, I think the young people, this is something that young people will watch. I mean, this isn't going to attract, this isn't like, Breaking Bad Netflix that everyone's going to binge watch for, but in that group, in that high school football player group that have, players and family members, and there's a player being recruited, they will watch this. And certainly if they're being recruited by Minnesota and the Gophers recruiting folks send out a notification, hey, don't forget to watch tonight or set your DVR or what have you. Absolutely. I mean, people get excited on this kind of inside football stuff. That's why HBO does its series, right, over the years. That's how Mike Zimmer got to be pretty well known. Build his kind of brand was when he was an assistant for the Bengals when they did that. And I forget the name of the series
Hard Knocks.
Hard Knocks, exactly. That's exactly it, Mitch. And, I'm not saying this is going to be like that, but I think this is kind of along those lines, and I think it can certainly help, again, to use a cliche, build that brand that Fleck is hoping to build on a national level. And, they have had some success already in Fleck's time here in terms of getting guys to verbally commit. They had a big recruiting weekend this past weekend, and it apparently sounds like it was a successful weekend.
Mike Grimm, voice of the Gophers, sports director at Minnesota News Network, kind enough to join us this afternoon here on The Blitz. Last week when you were on, it was right before Big Ten Media Day got going. Now that it's concluded, what were the takeaways from those who cover another Big Ten team or the conference as a whole? What were their impressions on PJ Fleck when he came up to the podium and then concluded his first presser?
Well, I think it's interesting. There was so much written about him. That to me was, first of all, striking, because that was my 11th Gopher, or my 11th media day covering the Gophers in Chicago for Big Ten football. And that has never, there's never been that kind of attention and coverage given to the Gophers and quite frankly, their head coach. I mean, Jerry Kill has a great story. He's a wonderful person and a good coach. And he got his share of attention there as well, but nothing like what Fleck did. And Fleck, again, it's part of his personality. It's kind of an energetic, high octane, in your face, on all the time. And that caught people. Some people, it caught them wrong. Like, you know, there were a couple of, I think one Pennsylvania writer who ripped into Fleck pretty good because he felt like he was, you know, basically, you know, shooting BS. Others really liked it. Tom Dienhart had a nice article from BTN. Joan Neeson had an article on Sports Illustrated about him. Obviously, the local folks who were there, Chip Scoggins and others, you know, talked about him as well. But in kind of how these days are structured, they have the general podium session. They had that. That's a 15-minute session for each coaches, for each coach, and Fleck filled the full 15 minutes. And someone jokingly tweeted the number of words was an all-time record that he got in. And even Pat Fitzgerald took a little bit of a fun shot afterwards, saying, "I'll give you guys a second to catch up," because he was the coach on right after Fleck. So there's no doubt that people understand what Fleck is about. But then after that, later in the day, they have what I guess call a sidebar podium, where the players and the coaches all sit at a podium by themselves. And it allows for a little bit more intimacy. It's not the big room with 300 or however many reporters are there. And I'll be honest, in some of the years past, the Gopher coach, and those are an hour session, the Gopher coach would sit there with one or two guys at his table for the last, you know, 15, 20 minutes of that. And that was not the case this time around. Fleck had the full on 15, 20 reporters deep. Questions all the time. People are genuinely interested in him. And I think, you know, there is a certain, I don't know how to say it, a circus effect of, that he has, that people just want to come watch what he is about. And so, and then the number of articles, the amount of attention, I can't even think of a close second place in my time covering it in terms of what was produced on the Gophers afterwards from all outlets, whether it be positive or negative. It was pretty remarkable. That was my big takeaway. The general response was wide across the board. I had a buddy of mine who works in Iowa mention that, man, that was exhausting, you know, listening to P.J. Fleck. And then I had a guy that I know from Nebraska who's like, man, that I could get excited for that. You know, I could play for him. That guy's unbelievable. Listen to him talk. So, you know, it's a wide range of reaction. There's no doubt about it.
They're also making the football program. P.J. Fleck made some noise outside of Big Ten Media Day last week, especially over the weekend. They scooped up some transfers as well. O.J. Smith transferring from Alabama. Chris Williamson, a cornerback from Florida, played for the Gators, will transfer to the University of Minnesota as well. Where do you peg this, Mike, on the big deal, somewhat of a deal scale?
Well, I think they'll both be contributors. It's not a big deal yet because they won't be eligible to play this coming season, 2017. They will have to sit out the year. But I think anytime you get a couple of guys who were high-level recruits to some national powers, I think that can be impactful. Again, we'll know more as you know, as their sit-out year, so to speak, rolls on to see more what they're about. I know some people would say, well, you know, they can't play, you know, there must be a reason that they weren't playing as much as they wanted at Florida and Alabama, so maybe they're not that good, and that could be the case. I don't know. But I think when you're trying to add depth and athletes across the board, when you get an opportunity to add two recruits, transfers from the SEC, you definitely go ahead and do that.
Last Gopher note that I want to touch base with you on. P.J. Fleck said, I think it was last week, that he was asked about the quarterback situation that's still unraveling, and he said something to the tune of, I'm slightly paraphrasing, but that he was hoping someone would sort of take it by the horns, the quarterback spot, and run with it, making it an easy decision. There's still time for that to happen. Has there been any notion that if it doesn't work out that way in these summer practices leading up to the season opener against Buffalo, has there been any notion that they would potentially entertain a two-quarterback system to start the year? Because I don't know, I've just never been in favor of that. Yet if one of these guys doesn't emerge, Connor Rota, Demery Croft, or someone else, would you think they'd ever entertain that?
Well, I mean, they may be forced into it if neither guy, you know, plays well. They just may have to rotate him until someone does or find out who has the hot hand. I think in general terms, you're right. And I think Fleck actually mentioned that he'd prefer not to do two quarterbacks as well. I think it was Mason who used to say, if you're playing two quarterbacks, it doesn't mean you have two. It means you don't have any, right? That are, you know, if you had a guy, you'd be playing him. So I do believe that there's something to be said for trying to find a guy play him and hope that he has the hot hand. Let's put it this way. This is my personal opinion. If the Gophers, if both those guys play a lot, I don't think that means good news for Minnesota. I think it means that they've probably struggled through a season at quarterback play. It doesn't mean they can't go win six or seven games with mediocre quarterback play. But if they want to take a step forward and shock the world or something, they're going to need to have one of those guys, show up. They're going to need to have one of those guys flash, unexpectedly. Whichever guy it might be, I don't know yet. But that would be something that would be fun to watch. I think that they prefer some guy win the job, keep it, and play well enough to keep it.
Mike Grimm with us this afternoon here on the Blitz. Let's bounce around other items. It's the end of July, kind of just feels like one of those days, and I haven't gotten your take yet on the whole Kyrie Irving situation. Would you be in favor of a trade bringing him here, of course, to the Minnesota Timberwolves if it meant parting ways with Andrew Wiggins? Because it doesn't seem like there's a deal out there that brings him to Minnesota unless the Wolves part ways with Andrew Wiggins.
Well, I would, but I am not a in-depth NBA, knowledgeable guy. So it seems to me that there's enough people out there saying that they would not do it, include Wiggins. And some of that is you have to remove emotion. And I think some fans, because he's been a member of your team and the other guy has not, you get attached. And I think oftentimes, and I think the Twins have fallen into this trap a few times where you get emotionally attached to certain players and you sign them to extensions or you feel like you shouldn't trade them or you hang with them longer than you should. And it's all good. It's meant with good intentions. But sometimes this has to be a cutthroat business. Again, personally, I would, and obviously depending on what else you're giving up, is it just Wiggins for Irving? And I don't quite honestly even know the entire contract situation for both either, how much maneuvering that would have to happen to get it done. It just seems unrealistic that would be a possibility that Irving would come here, but apparently Minnesota's on that list of teams that his people have leaked out or somebody's people has leaked out. But if it were straight up or close to it, I think I'd make that trade. Yeah, I think I'd have him come in and I think Wiggins is a good player. I'm not sure he has lived up yet. I mean, he's had some big nights. He scored 40 a handful of times and done some different things. But he's entering. He's young, so he's still got a lot of upside for sure. But Irving has been one of the top handful of point guards in the league, and certainly that would be a big thing. Now you got Teague, who you just signed. I don't know. I guess you can't trade him until what, December, due to league rules, and so I don't know how all that would work. But if the question is on the surface, which guy would you rather have, and it's a basic even up where you wouldn't have to give up too much in addition, I think I'd rather have Irving on my team than I would Wiggins. But that's just me.
And you brought up one of the main kickers. If you're Minnesota, you almost have to at least entertain the idea and flirt or tease a little bit with Cleveland, because Kyrie Irving, you have a superstar, 25 years old, who's entering. He's entering the prime of his career. He wants out of his current situation, and he listed Minnesota as one of his four teams of preference, which, I mean, I've only been in the state of Minnesota for 2 years, but I don't think it's happened too many times in Timberwolves history where a superstar, a budding superstar in the league, has named Minnesota on his short list of teams that he would prefer to go to as a destination. The one angle of this, Mike, that I haven't seen too many people bring up in Minnesota, which has kind of surprised me. To me, it all circulates around Golden State, because if you trade for Kyrie Irving, you're only guaranteed 2 years of Kyrie Irving, which is left on his contract if you trade for him. Same with Jimmy Butler. And to me, Kyrie is clearly better than Andrew Wiggins right now. There's no doubt about it. But does he make the Wolves better than Golden State? And if the answer to that is no, I say you almost maybe should wait out the storm in the Bay Area, give Andrew Wiggins his 5-year extension, and just run with it that way. But it certainly is a tough, you can forecast it either way, and I'm not for or against it in a major way either side.
Yeah, there's a lot of maneuvering, or at least a lot of considerations there, including not the least of which is do we know if Wiggins wants to stay here long term? I mean, he's got the 5th year, so he'll be here 5 years, but then after that he would be, I think free to go, and so there's no guarantees. I mean, to maximize his money, I think based on the collective bargaining agreement, he would sign the deal here. But I don't think there's any guarantee that that's the case. And nowadays in the NBA, with the way these guys are colluding together to try to get on rosters, I think I think it's a dangerous game to play, personally, if you start going by, well, Golden State's going to be really good for another 4 years, so let's not really start worrying about anything until 5 years from now, because then you just continue to put things on hold. The Twins have gotten into that pattern a little bit as well. At some point, you have to start just playing games to win them and see where the chips fall. I mean, either way, Golden State, whoever you have, is probably going to be better. But at some point, you have to start talking these young guys into winning games, making the playoffs, and feeling like, yeah, I want to sign long-term here. Because, again, there's no guarantees anybody's going to stay past that initial five-year deal, I don't think.
The jack of all trades, Mike Grimm, with us. We'll finish up a couple of Twins notes. We'll cover all the bases. No pun intended. So, Twins lost 2 of 3 to Oakland over the weekend in Oakland. I thought, Mike, that it was settled before that with the 4-8 start to the second half. Granted, they were playing some of the better teams in baseball, the Dodgers, the Astros, the Yankees peppered in there as well. But the 4-8 start post-All-Star break, I thought, settled it, that if the Twins should do anything here at the trade deadline as it looms later on this afternoon, that they should sell. Were you of the same mindset? I'm not advocating that you sell off everything, but if it's either stand pat, buy, or sell, I thought the 4-8 start to the second half indicated that, yes, they should sell if they do anything.
Yeah, you know, and it's weird how that worked. They were buyers, a week ago, and they got Jaime Garcia, and you know, literally a week later, I mean, not even a week later, a handful of days later, 2 days after his only start, he's traded as a seller. You know, the Twins become sellers. I actually think they made out pretty well in that trade. They got two really good prospects from the Yankees. And as it turns out, they didn't give up much. They sent one prospect to Atlanta. So I think for Garcia to start with, so I think the trade worked out okay. And you know, here they are now. And you know, what now does anybody else bring? And how, like you say, how big of a seller do you want to be? And how far down the road are you shooting? Because I still say, if you're thinking 2018, which means next summer, you can contend. I have a hard time parting with Irvin Santana. I really do, because he's under contract for next year at an affordable rate. You know, he has pitched when he's on. He's an ace. He's not, you know, he's not a top 15 pitcher in this league probably, but he's a top 25 pitcher in this league, and he's very affordable. You know, all things being equal, he's going to make good money. But when you look at budgets and those kind of things, I'd need a really good haul to trade him here today. Because that, you know, today's, you know, it. Dozier the same way. He's still fairly affordable, you know, for a couple more years, too. So I'd need, if you think 18's the year, and I think if you're the Twins, you have to start thinking next summer's the year we have to start at least playing big games, you know. And there's still that outside chance that if they get going again and get hot and win 7 of 8 somewhere, that they can be playing important games this year yet. But by and large, I think you want to look at next year being one of the opportunities you can have to start winning games and start being contending. And if that's the case, it's hard to part with a couple of those guys.
We'll leave on this. I know there's some pessimism floating throughout the fan base, especially on social media, with this recent slump that the Twins have endured. But, man, I never thought we'd be in a scenario this year, a week out from the deadline, where it would be heavily debated whether or not the Twins should buy or sell. And quite literally a week and a half ago, and you mentioned they scooped up Jaime Garcia, and it was almost an indicator that, hey, the Twins aren't going to sell out the farm and go all in this year, but they're making moves to try to win at least a little bit right now, and they're investing a little bit in this year. I didn't think we'd be in a spot, Mike, where a week and a half out from the deadline in 2017, we would be talking, debating whether or not the Twins should buy or sell.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure, to be quite honest, when Levine and Falvey took the job, they had not had that scenario up there, you know, coming off 103 losses, which you and I have talked about this before. I think that was, you know, this team wasn't that bad last year. I mean, they weren't any good, but part of it was that atrocious start, and then you just get in that death spiral, and the losses are accumulating quicker than you want. And, you know, you can be a competitor, but it's hard to continue to play when the season's over by Memorial Day, and so you lose games. But that said, I thought they were closer to a 500 team this year, and that's about what they've been. They're 2 under now. They've been, I think, as high as 7 or 8 over, and in first place for much of May and June. So no one expected that, including probably Falvey and Levine. That's why in the offseason they were entertaining offers on Brian Dozier to try to add and look ahead. And does this put them a little further ahead of where maybe they thought? I don't know, really, and they've never really publicly spoken, Falvey and Levine, about okay, 2019's our year, 2020's the year that we're really going to put it together. And look, there's all kinds of teams around baseball that have good farm systems that are in the same boat thinking, okay, let's think 2 or 3 years down the road. And at some point, like I said, you have to start playing for now. And I think that has to be next summer, 2018, which they have to, I think, in turn, start thinking about how they want to handle today. And then when they get into next month, August, the non-waiver deadline, the waiver deadline, where you have to clear waivers to make a trade, and who knows who might or might not clear waivers and who might be available or not available, both on your team and on other teams. So all those things have to be taken into consideration. There's no doubt about that. And these guys are smart baseball people, and we'll see what they come up with. But it's going to be fun to see where this takes them and how quickly it can take them to where they want to be.
Trade deadline day is upon us in Major League Baseball. The Gophers starting up summer practices. Mike, as always, thank you for the time. It's appreciated.
You got it. Thank you, Mitch. Enjoyed it.
We're going to rip through plenty of sound bites. Xavier Rhodes, Paul Molitor, and others coming up next right here on The Blitz.